It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams sale and get 30% off Duration, Woodscapes, and SuperDeck products May 1st through the 11th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
Chilling tales for dark nights.
The following program is a production of Chilling Entertainment and the creative team at Chilling Tales for Dark Nights, and a proud member of the Simply Scary Podcast Network. Visit simplyscarypodcast.com to learn more about this and our other weekly storytelling programs, and become a patron today to show your support and get instant access to our extensive archive of downloadable tales of terror. Thank you for listening, and enjoy the show. Disclaimer. Horror Hill is a horror anthology podcast bringing you scary stories from all corners of the internet and beyond. As such, certain stories include content that some listeners might find offensive. Listener discretion is advised. Good evening, listeners, and welcome back to Horror Hill. I'm Eric Peabody, and this, friends, is the beginning of Season 13, a personal favorite number of mine. You might notice some small changes to the audio processing for the show moving forward, as this lumbering beast is somehow still evolving as it ravages its way into the future. However, we're not here to talk about equalizers and sidechain compressors. We're here to talk about horror. Specifically, we're here to talk about tonight's author, Ross Tyson. Ross has given us two stories for tonight, both of which take place in Georgia, USA. We'll open with In Bloom, where two young lovers encounter some surprisingly welcoming hosts after their car breaks down, and then close out with House of the Lord, where a new janitorial job at a small church entails far more than scrubbing pews. You're listening to the free edition of this program. If you'd like to help support Horror Hill and also remove these pesky ads, head to chillingtalesfordarknights.com and click Patrons in the upper menu to sign up today. You'll get instant access to hundreds of ad-free stories, so what are you waiting for? Also, if you're watching on YouTube, do us a favor and drop a like and subscribe. Become part of our dark circle, listeners. And now, from author Ross Tyson, I give you In Bloom. Pop! Tara was awakened suddenly to what sounded like a firework exploding right next to her ear. She felt the car skid as Matt lost control, desperately trying to keep the car away from the steep ditch filled with swamp water. Shit! Matt screamed as he lost the battle, another pop echoing from Tara's other side. Gravity slapped her to the side as they went down into the ditch, throwing her face first into the dashboard as she desperately put her hands up in vain, crashing hard into the dash on her left cheek. They came to a stop as Tara held a hand to her face, looking to the driver's seat. Matt sat there, skin pale, with a thousand-yard stare looking straight ahead. He had a small trickle of blood coming from his nose, but kept a tight grip on the wheel. "You okay?" Tara asked. Matt let out a shudder before everything suddenly hit. "Holy shit. I'm okay. Are you? Jesus, I don't know what happened." He was speaking fast and breathing shallowly, a panic attack setting in. Tara put an arm on his shoulder and brought him close. "It's okay, it's okay. Hey." She stroked his hair as his breathing leveled, coming down from the anxiety threatening to overwhelm him. "Everything's gonna be all right. You hurt?" "Hit the wheel with my nose. Are you okay?" He started searching for his phone on the floorboard, finding nothing. "Neck hurts a little. Dash came right at my face, but I'll be all right. Here." She pulled up her beaten old phone, scratches and a small crack along the screen. "Shit. Of course. I think we blew a damn tire," Matt muttered. "Well, I don't have a signal," Tara said, tossing the phone down in her lap and pulling the visor mirror down. A bruise was beginning to show on her left cheek. "It's getting late, too. Jesus Christ, can't one fucking thing go right?" Matt was composed again, the panic attack behind him and adrenaline kicking in. "Hey, we're gonna be okay. I'm gonna take stock, you just take a minute. Breathe." Matt took charge. Tara nodded as he pushed his door open, grunting with the fight against gravity. "Be careful, please!" She shouted after him as he jumped out, the door screeching down after him. Tara rolled her window down. "How does it look?" "Fucked!" he shouted back. "Back tire on my side's blown. Can't even see the other side, but the front tire's flat now, too." Matt screamed at the sky, kicking the car's fender. "Oh, hell," Tara said, suddenly feeling something on her foot. Looking down, she could see dirty water trickling in, pooling on the floorboard from the flooded ditch. "There's a leak." "Seriously?" Matt said, putting his hands to his face and groaning. Tara grabbed what she could, looking at her reflection in the rear view as she clambered over to Matt's side and pushed the door open. A bruise was already beginning to show, though she wasn't sure if it was from the crash or not. "Can't have one goddamn thing go right in my goddamn life!" "Any idea where the hell we are?" Tara questioned, pretending not to hear his mutterings. "I don't think anyone's mapped this place yet," he replied. The sun hung low over the road, mixing their shadows into the dark pecan trees off the curb. "Gas station was about 5 miles back. Might as well head that way." He barely had the words out before headlights appeared in the distance, racing toward them. Matt hesitated before Tara started jumping alongside him, arms waving. As the vehicle slowed to a stop, they could see a massive lifted truck, a round old man behind the wheel, looking like he was headed to a tractor pull.
"Yes, sir, we blew a tire and, well, you see it," Matt said, his voice shaking.
The adrenaline was gone and aches had set in for both of them, fatigue starting to follow quickly behind.
"Either of y'all hurt?"
he asked, looking them over. Tara looked like a mess, with makeup running down her face and red hair wild. Matt was shifting from foot to foot, nervous.
"You can hop on in. Least I can do is get y'all off the road before it gets dark."
Matt glanced at Tara, raising eyebrows as if to say it was a bad idea. He noticed the shadows bathing them both, obscuring half of Tara's face as the driver kept looking. She spoke before he could.
"That would be amazing, please," she said, holding her hands up in thanks. "Things just haven't gone right today."
"Well, ain't nothing any decent human wouldn't do," the man said, unlocking the truck. "Y'all hop on in."
Matt opened the back door for Tara, helping her into the lifted cab and squeezing her hand tight. Once she was in, he climbed into the front passenger seat, pulling the door closed behind him.
"Thank you," Matt said to the man, buckling.
"I thought we were trapped out here, wherever here is."
"Ah, don't worry about it. You're right outside of Red Shades, Georgia. Y'all from around here?"
He chuckled.
"Hell, it don't matter where you're from. Matters you're here. On the right day, too."
Tara let out a small sound before choosing to stay quiet instead.
"Damn it, Jerry, where the hell are your manners? I'm so sorry, miss. I invited you all in my car and I ain't even told you my name."
Nervous laughter, he took his hand off the wheel and offered it to Matt.
"Name's Jerry Tilson. Nice to meet you."
Matt's hand was shaking as he raised it to meet Jerry's, cold sweat making it even weirder.
"I'm Matt. This is Tara,"
he said, the shaking seeping from his hand to his voice.
"Well, bad as breaking down is, y'all couldn't have picked a better place."
Matt drew back as Jerry laughed loud.
"Ha ha, we got the swamp stomp tonight. Just a little festival we do in the spring, you know. Food, music, little games for the kids and all. Y'all can stay and have some food while we get your car."
"Oh, gosh, no. You've already been so nice to us," Matt said, looking toward the window as the sun's last light died. As Jerry laughed, Tara looked from her window, now seeing thicker trees and the moon reflecting off dark water. Something about it was mesmerizing, almost alien.
"I insist. Y'all look like you've had a rough day of it."
He looked in the rear view at Tara.
"Apologies, miss. You're very pretty, just look like you're exhausted."
"Oh, you're fine," she said, looking back through the window. She could see a large, clear expanse of water suddenly, with only a small island breaking the surface in the middle. The moss was shining, moonlight dancing off the water around it in little waves. She could see the moon reflecting on either side of the little island and lights across the water.
"It's beautiful out there," Tara said, still transfixed by the dual moon in the water. She couldn't break her gaze, as if the swamp was challenging her to a staring contest. It wasn't until they passed a tree that she seemed to come to her senses.
"Yes, ma'am," Jerry exclaimed. "Out here on a clear night without all that city light, you can just about see every star in heaven. Well, that's why we do this in the spring. Between the sky and all the fireflies coming back to the swamp, looks like you're walking through stars."
Matt glanced back over his shoulder at her, eyes wide and questioning. Tara shook her head at him, unsure why he was so worried.
"All right, we're just up ahead here," Jerry said, slowing the truck and putting his blinker on. "I know there ain't anyone coming up behind me, but those state troopers will get you for the darndest little things."
Tara giggled a bit in the back seat, looking at the lights ahead as the truck turned down a dusty dirt road. Matt noticed crowds of people milling about, probably 50 or 60 at least, hovering between trees and under lights. As Jerry reached the lighted area and slowed, they could see tables and chairs set up all around a small dance floor. Some younger children were already chasing each other around the wooden platform, laughing as they ran.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Game night's fun until someone spends 5 minutes lining up one shot. Chalk, breathe, rechalk. Still aiming. While they figure it out, I fire up Chumba Casino. I can spin anywhere, anytime, and there's always a new social casino game every week. Spins happen way faster than that shot. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Alrighty. I'll introduce y'all to Sam, then go get Earl. Me and him will go get your car for you,
Jerry said, freeing his seatbelt from holding his gut back.
Now, y'all are gonna love food. We're doing chili this year, and I've heard Cecilia got some good stuff up her sleeve.
Jerry hopped out of the lifted cab, grunting as he hit the ground and closing the door behind him. Matt looked back at Tara again as they both unbuckled, still visibly shaken.
"It's definitely human meat," Tara joked, trying to get him to lighten up. "I'll eat anything at this point, though."
Matt shook his head, following her out of the truck and over to Jerry, who was already bouncing along toward one of the bustling food stalls.
"Samantha, hope y'all ain't dug in yet,"
Jerry hollered across as they walked.
"I got a couple hungry mouths coming your way."
An older woman appeared behind one of the stall tarps, dark skin shining with sweat against solid white hair.
"No, but we should have before you go getting your paws all up in every dish,"
she shouted back as Jerry laughed, embracing her as he closed in. Tara and Matt exchanged surprised looks as Jerry and Samantha parted, kissing each other on the lips before separating. Jerry noticed and laughed.
I promise we don't go kissing each other like that around here.
Jerry smiled. We know a town like ours is kind of an outlier around these parts. This is my wife, Samantha, and this is Matt and Tara.
We're just all about love, Samantha said, leaning on Jerry's arm and looking at him with love and almost relief that he was back. Oh my God, you two are so cute.
Tara held a hand over her chest and gripped Matt's with her other.
Well, thank you, darling. Now, how did my goof of a husband manage to pick y'all up?
She motioned them over into a little booth, set them up with bubbling pots and trays of cornbread. Matt and Tara awkwardly moved to the side as someone bustled past, bringing in another large pot to Samantha, filled with various cups and bowls. Matt started to talk before being cut off by Jerry.
They blew a tire back on the highway. I'm about to go find Earl and get the tow for him, he said, scanning the crowd beyond.
Now where is that old bastard?
I saw him out by Cece's booth,
Samantha chimed back, stirring a pot.
You gonna be back in time for the ceremony?
That's why I'm gonna make Earl do it, Jerry said, moving over to a pot next to her and pulling a spoonful of chili out, holding it up to his lips before taking a huge bite.
Ow, God damn, that's hot. Needs a little salt. Now, this is exactly what I mean. Get out my kitchen!
Samantha swatted him away, snatching the spoon. Jerry tiptoed off, picking a dinner roll off a nearby tray as he walked from the stall. Samantha sighed.
That man would eat everything here if we let him.
Tara giggled as a rumbling came from Matt. Samantha looked back at them and gave a little laugh.
It sounds like y'all need some food.
She turned to the table in front of her, grabbing bowls and plopping a square of cornbread from nearby down into each before drowning it in a huge spoon of her chili.
Now, y'all are gonna have to work for it.
Tara exchanged a side glance with Matt, putting a hand close to her purse.
Yeah, we can do dishes and help clean up, Tara offered.
Oh no, y'all ain't gonna be cleaning up, Samantha whispered, sticking a spoon into each bowl and handing them to the starving couple.
Tara was getting a little uneasy now, with Jerry gone and just her and Matt in the small booth. Everyone outside seemed to be settling now instead of just mingling. Matt noticed a large kitchen knife right next to Samantha on the table.
When it comes time, she said, smiling and handing them the bowls, y'all need to vote for my chili. Damn if I'm gonna let Cecilia win again. Not this year, hell no.
Tara laughed, relaxing again as she took the bowl, the spices stinging her nose as they steamed up. Samantha gestured them after her, eating as they walked towards a table where a young couple was sitting across from each other.
Y'all, this is Matt and this is Tara. They had a little accident out on Route 87, so we're keeping them fed and entertained.
Samantha motioned to the man, mid-20s, with chestnut skin and a bushy beard.
Now I expect you to make sure they feel welcome while your pa fixes their car.
Yes, Mama,
the man responded, looking at the two newcomers. His eyes rested on Tara for a moment before looking back to his mother. He seemed shocked.
I'm Blake. Nice to meet y'all.
Satisfied, Samantha walked away as the couple took a seat across from each other at the table. Matt next to Blake and Tara sat opposite, next to the now smiling woman.
I'm Jess.
The woman extended a hand to shake. Tara took it awkwardly, feeling Jess squeeze a little too hard.
Tara, nice to meet you.
She was eating fast, almost inhaling the food.
I'm so sorry, I haven't eaten all day. I don't mean to be rude. Darling, don't you be sorry for a thing. We're blessed to have you here,
Jess said, waving her off.
Y'all sure got some good timing, though.
This swamp's gonna look beautiful this spring.
Jess trailed off, looking intensely at Tara, giving her goosebumps as she felt studied. She shifted as to cover herself, even though she was already wearing long sleeves.
Oh my God, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to stare like that.
Jess suddenly snapped back to reality, grabbing Tara's hand in her own.
You are just so darn pretty. I've always wanted my hair that shade of red and never could get it. Now, how long have y'all been together?
Tara looked at Matt, avoiding conversation despite Blake's attempts. His dark hair was rustled in every direction at this point, looking like a bird had nested in it. He glanced at her briefly before going back to eating.
It'll be 10 years next month, Tara answered, turning a little red. We met in college and we've been together ever since.
Jess smiled, squeezing her hand back. Tara noticed Matt shooting little glances around.
Can't imagine what you all have been through. Things must have been tough, Jess said, trying to start more conversation. Y'all probably haven't gotten too many warm welcomes around these parts.
Tara's complexion switched to deep, blushing red, prompting Jess to backtrack hard.
Oh my God, I'm so sorry. I shouldn't have said that. I didn't mean to offend or anything. We just don't see many of y'all out here.
Jess was tripping over words before they even made it past her lips.
Oh, damn it, I didn't mean y'all like that, like... Ah, hell, I'm gonna just shut up. You're totally fine. It happens a lot more than you think.
Tara waved her off, laughing a little.
Yeah, traveling the South's been a little up and down for us. Some places are safe, some not so much. I'm so sorry you have to go through that, darling. You are absolutely a beautiful woman. Don't let anyone tell you anything otherwise.
Jess took a moment to compose herself, wiping a small tear away.
Well, y'all been together over a decade, but I don't see a ring. Oh, gosh, we haven't really talked about that yet. I just met his parents.
Tara trailed off, remembering the morning's chaos.
We're fine how we are, I think.
Jess offered a smile and patted Tara on the shoulder, giving her reassurance. Tara grabbed a napkin, wiping smudged mascara from her eyes before looking back.
It's just a piece of paper anyway. Though, I think you would out-pretty the flowers out here in a wedding dress.
Jess smiled and stood up, motioning over to Blake.
Come help me grab drinks for these two.
For sure. Want a beer?
Blake stood, and Matt nodded in return, staring into the distance as Blake and Jess walked off. Tara could see the wooden dance floor paneling close by now, noticing intricate carvings and patterns on the floor.
You seem really nervous, Tara said,
snapping Matt back to reality. She put a hand on the table, open for him to take.
I just don't like this, Matt said. Somebody's gonna find out. What, about me? I don't think any of them will care. Jess doesn't.
Tara, confused now.
You've never had a problem being seen with me before. No, Tara, about my parents,
Matt replied, still staring off into the distance, distracted.
Why? They made it obvious they don't like me.
Sighing, she picked at her remaining food before pointing one finger at the bruising, becoming more visible with makeup giving way to sweat.
Pretty sure your dad did when he gave me this and called me a corrupting sodomite. No, after that. When you ran out.
Matt was suddenly clear-eyed, looking at her.
I think I killed him, Tara.
Tara stopped, air catching in her throat.
Sorry, what?
Tara could only remember meeting his father briefly before being punched when he made the connection.
No, you came out with me and put me in the car. You hugged me and told me it would be okay.
No, Tara.
Matt's voice was breaking, choking on spit and snot as his breathing quickened.
He hit you. So I hit him and he fell by the fireplace. You were dazed and I was angry. I didn't fucking mean to. I'm sorry. I'm so fucking sorry. I'm so fucking sorry. Sorry. I love you.
Everything suddenly slowed, the world dragging and sounds growing dull. Tara could feel her pulse in her ears while the lights suddenly flared brighter. She didn't feel the table suddenly meet her bruised face.
We sure they're gonna work. I just don't want shit backfiring just to have your kids put back up there or all of us fucked.
A man's voice echoed all around as Tara came to. She tried to move, but couldn't, her muscles working against her.
Fuck's sake, Earl. I don't know how many times I gotta tell you it don't matter so long as they love each other.
Was that Jerry?
Tara felt heavy, the weight of planets pushing her into the earth. She tried to open her eyes, fighting against the haze.
Aw, hell. Ain't supposed to be awake yet, Samantha.
Finally, she cracked an eye open, almost blinded by the single light left on in the small gathering, hanging over the small dance platform.
Someone was standing right under the light, head nodding forward.
Matt!
Tara tried to scream, seeing that her boyfriend was tied to a stake erected in the middle of the platform, still in the dream space between sleep and waking. Her voice came out as a garbled half-moan, her muscles refusing to do what her brain was screaming for them to do.
Well, it ain't like I had a whole lot of warning. Couldn't even tell me about this damn crazy plan you have. All I had to work with was a bottle of Benadryl Cecilia had,
shouted Samantha from the far side of the crowd. Matt groaned as Tara tried again to call to him, still not making the sound she wanted. Matt's head nodded to the side, catching sight of Tara.
All right, it don't matter. What matters is that they're here, and they're gonna help us tonight,
Jerry said, walking in front of Matt and quieting everyone down.
Now, since she's awake, it's only fair she knows why this is happening.
Oh, we ain't gotta tell him shit. Just kill the boyfriend and let me go home,
a voice from the crowd. Tara could hear small murmurs and quite a few boos among the crowd.
Frank, I'd put you up here instead of her if anyone loved you enough,
Jerry replied, drawing cheers and laughter from the crowd.
Now, call her that again and I'm gonna throw you in as at for one. Y'all have some damn respect for what this young man and woman are doing for us.
For you,
another voice.
Awfully damn convenient, all things considered.
Shut the hell up, Earl,
Jerry again. He walked over to Matt, grabbing him by the chin and tilting his head up, slapping his cheek lightly with his other hand. He mumbled something inaudible to Matt, leaning in close so nobody else could hear, then wrapped him in a brief bear hug before stepping back and pulling Matt's head straight up, exposing his neck. He pulled a large hunting knife from his waistband, holding it up to Matt's neck, making sure it was placed just right, before pulling the serrated edge across fast. Tara tried to scream his name again, only for pained sobs to escape in short breaths. Jerry stepped away as blood poured from Matt's throat, soaking the platform below and all its intricate runes. Tara could see them more clearly now, symbols and rituals she remembered from a book long ago, something from her more witchy days. They glowed vaguely familiar as his blood flowed through the connected etchings, eventually completing the entire circle. Rot filled Tara's nose, stinking of putrid swamp water and decaying flesh. As the final light flickered out above Matt's head, she could see thousands of small dots illuminating the darkness, playing off the water of the swamp. Tara saw the two twin moons on either side of the island, sparks of fireflies making them look in motion. As her eyes adjusted, she noticed clouds in the sky, blinding moon and stars from her sight. Tara stared transfixed as the twin moons rose above the water, the mossy island rising with them to tower over the swamp. Waves splashed against the small clearing as it moved toward them, gliding smoothly across the dark water. She couldn't tell what the hell it was in the dark, only noticing the soft, pale yellow of the two bulbous, pockmarked orbs she assumed were eyes. Before she knew what happened, it had glided onto the land, skittering loudly closer, and then settling upon Matt, whatever blood was left in him, flying. The thing turned, and Tara made out Matt's dangling, mangled body being slowly pulled into a wide, vertical mouth lined with small feelers. She screamed again.
"Take this love. We bleed for you," Jerry said, bowing his head.
The crowd echoed him in a fearful chorus. As it left back into the water, smearing the viscera and swamp scum behind it, Tara couldn't scream any longer. The moon came out again, just long enough to catch a small flash of a leathery, translucent exterior before the thing vanished, taking Matt to the depths along with it. Tara simply sobbed as a light came on and four men stepped forward, one holding each of her limbs. Together, they lifted her over to the edge of the water, setting her gently on the shore.
"Why?"
she managed to choke out as Jerry came toward her.
"I am sorry," Jerry said, kneeling next to her. "I want you to know that it was nothing personal. You were just the first car that came by."
Terrace sobbed again as he pulled the hunting knife out, trying to shrink back and hide her neck, but barely managing to nudge herself toward the water.
No, I won't use this on you. You don't deserve any undue pain. You're helping us. I couldn't do this to them, not to my own. I'm sorry. I hope you understand.
He placed a hand on her cheek, brushing calloused fingers gently over her bruised face. Jess walked up from behind him, kneeling down next to him as Jerry washed his knife in the water.
I meant what I said. I'm sorry. You don't deserve any of this. You'll bloom more beautiful than I ever could,
Jess whispered to Tara, gently kissing her on the same bruised cheek before standing up. Tara felt something coarse and slimy work its way up her feet, dragging her further down into the water. Screaming in vain as water filled her lungs, fireflies became stars in the space above her. Her last fading thought as her body settled to the bottom, moss and algae moving along her arms and legs, was that the two moons in the murky depths near her were oddly tranquil. Their moonlight glow through the black water lulled her into a dreamless sleep as her breathing stopped, the living greenery finally enveloping her completely into the warm embrace of Earth.
Hey, it's Cole Swindell, and when I spend 200 days a year rolling down the highway, the bus can start to feel smaller than a guitar case. Everyone wonders how I stay chill while the hours crawl by. Truth is, one good luck spent on Chumba, and suddenly the trip feels a whole lot shorter. Finding your space, even when there isn't much to spare. Need some chill? Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus TNC supply. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
You've been listening to In Bloom by Ross Tyson. Next, here's House of the Lord, also by Ross Tyson.
Considering how crappy everything pays right now, I was beyond hyped when I found an opening for a night janitor paying $40 an hour in the rural-ass backwater swamp of Georgia. $40 fucking an hour? To clean a church? My little agnostic heart was ready to pull up for an altar call once they finally hired me. Good God, I see why they pay that high now. It's an easy enough schedule. I go in after church services or meetings, do some basic cleaning, and dip out. Takes maybe 2 or 3 hours every night, and I do an afternoon clean on Sundays between services. So, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, I do a couple of late nights, and it's all good. They told me they wanted a more thorough clean once a week, whatever day I chose, so I just decided to make my Wednesday nights the long ones. For $40 an hour, I'm not gonna skimp either. I go over every goddamn inch of God's good house with a fine-tooth comb. I'm in here flipping more tables than Jesus to make sure they're clean. It takes maybe 7 hours or so to go through everything, and it's the easiest money I've ever made. The place is old. From what they told me when I started, it's at least a couple of centuries, built in colonial times and renovated or rebuilt over the years on the same land. There's a little cemetery out behind it too, though many of the graves are too worn down to read at this point. They haven't had a new resident since the 1800s, I think. One big sanctuary makes up most of the place, with a couple of little rooms in the back behind the main altar. A little door on the right side led back into a small hallway that smelled of mildew, with two doors on the left and one at the other end of the hall. Normally, it would look like just your average old Protestant church in the south, except it gets a little weird. The first door on the left is painted blue, not like a regular blue either, but like a bright cerulean. It's both padlocked and deadbolted from the outside, though, and only the pastor, William, has a key to it. When I was talking to Anita, the treasurer who hired me, she told me she had no idea what was down there, but it was probably just old storage or something. I had to ask her again when she said, "down there," because we're in the heart of Georgia swamp country. If someone tries to make a basement around here, they're just going to get a room of crumbling mud and humidity. She assured me it was a cellar, though she only was told this by Pastor William. My first Monday night clean went off without a problem. Went in and just ran a vacuum over the floor after a prayer group meeting.
Tuesday, I was off, so I just stayed home and played Shadow of the Erdtree. Wednesday night, after service, I went in around 8:30 to start my cleaning. The only person left there was William at that point, but even then, we only briefly passed each other as he was heading out. There wasn't much to say of the interaction, though. We just exchanged pleasantries, and he said he was off to get some shut-eye. I was desperate to get into the church and out of the swamp heat. I got in, walked to the little supply closet in the back of the sanctuary, and pulled out the vacuum. Wednesday night service wasn't very crowded usually, just a few grandmas and a really devout couple of middle-aged men with their thick study Bibles, so nothing was really dirty. I figured I could just milk the clock a little by dusting around and just fucking about in general. Might as well get some money while I'm here. Vacuumed the sanctuary with no problem, and went to go get in the back hallway next. It's probably a good time to mention the sanctuary has two sets of lights, one for the front altar area and the other for the actual pews and seating area. I only had the altar area lights on because they were pretty damn bright. Until you get into the hallway, at least. Then you can barely see because the light only extends a few pews out. Headphones in, music going, I just kept doing my cleaning. Ran down the hall into the office next to the blue door, and even got to the pastor's office while I was at it. I didn't really notice anything until I looked up and out the door from the end of the hallway. I could see straight down the beige hall, blue door glowing bright in the fluorescent, into the sanctuary. I don't think I've ever felt goosebumps like I did when I looked down that hall. At least 7 or 8 people were sitting in the pews just out of the light's reach. They were all dressed in black, heads bowed so faces couldn't be seen. I had to squint to see them, almost, but they were definitely in the first 2 rows outside of the light. I don't know if there was anything behind them. It was much darker, but I was already shook. I briefly closed my eyes and reopened them, but they were still fucking there. Then, there was a loud thump on the blue door, like something being thrown hard against it. But there wasn't a sound of it falling down, either. I took my attention from the sanctuary to the blue door for just seconds, but it was long enough for everyone in the sanctuary to suddenly vanish. Nothing was there when I looked back, with it looking just like I'd left it. Not a soul around. I kind of just shook it off as having, like, a late-night heebie-jeebies moment, you know? Except I finished up right there and started locking up. I've never really believed in any kind of supernatural. I was religious in my younger days, but had since really drifted off. I've always liked horror stuff, but the idea of ghosts and shit in the real world? Please. Then, I realized I had to turn the lights off at the altar and leave through the main sanctuary door. I swear, I'm not scared of the dark, but I'd be lying if I said I wasn't creeped out a little. I turned off the light, saw the moon shining through the stained glass, and immediately got a chill again. It's been nearly 100 degrees with full humidity the past few days, and it felt like I was being dunked in ice water. There wasn't even anything there. I looked around, but nothing. I pulled my phone out and turned on the flashlight, making a quick pace toward the front doors. I swear, to whatever god you want to hold me to, that there was the sound of footsteps thudding along behind me. I swung the door open and practically dived through. Never felt so fucking good to feel swamp heat on my skin. Slammed the damn thing behind me, too. Started to walk to my car, and then realized I didn't lock it. I thought about just not going back, leaving it be until the next person got there on Friday for a prayer group. Then I realized the money I would lose if I didn't do something right and lost this job. Look, rent is fucking high right now, and I've got to pay bills. So, despite everything in me telling me to get the hell out, I turned around to go lock the door. The keys were in my hands, jingling like wind chimes because I was shaking so damn hard. I finally got the key in and started to turn it, when sound started reverberating from the sanctuary, a chorus with an organ swelling to a crescendo. I turned the key and yanked it out at the same time, almost taking the doorknob with me, and ran the hell out of there. I could still hear it in my car when I started it and whipped out of the little dirt parking lot. Pretty sure I hit the ditch on the way out too, but I sure as shit wasn't just gonna stop. wasn't until a few minutes into my drive that my hand finally loosened on the steering wheel, and I realized what they were singing. I remember it from going to an old Baptist church with my grandma. They only did old hymnals and refused to use anything but a piano, but I remember the damn words. Nothing can for sin atone, nothing but the blood of Jesus. Not of good that I have done, nothing but the blood of Jesus. I asked Anita about it on Friday night when I went in, made sure I was out by nightfall this time too. She said that she'd always thought there were angels around this place, keeping watch over the flock. Don't know how angelic that sounds, but I guess she hasn't been there alone after dark. When I told Pastor William about the thump coming from behind the blue door, he had the briefest flicker of something on his face. Then it was right back into smiling preacher mode like fucking baby Billy, told me that there was a problem with possums digging into the basement and not finding their way out. I don't know that I really believed him. That sounded bigger than any possum I've ever seen. Even the one that gets into my garbage every night, I started calling Round Ronald. No way a possum was going to get that fierce with the door. They canceled service on Sunday, so I was off. Going back in tonight after the prayer meetings and doing a little cleaning, so I'll update if there's anything that happens. I want to chalk it up to just being in a strange place at night, but there's no way those chills were based on nothing. This shit keeps up. I might start praying while I'm there. Yeah, not gonna lie, I've worked some really awful jobs, but next to nothing has had me feeling this kind of anxiety before going in. Hell, I remember puking every morning before going to my call center healthcare job, getting screamed at and told you're the reason that some boomer is gonna die, all because their heart medication was denied by the insurance and they had to pay $3. It's really not fun, like at all, but I would honestly take it again at this point, if it paid the same as this place. Went in last night to clean after the prayer meetings, except I went in a little early to see if I could actually catch William, maybe see if I could get through the blue door. Didn't work, mind you. Think he's being a lot more secretive about something than he lets on. I approached him after the last of the older men left, giving a hearty wave and see you Wednesday along with it. Pastor William started to walk back to his office as I was starting to get my usual cleaning supplies out. The sun was still up, so I was planning on hitting this place quick and getting the hell out before it got dark again. Never thought I'd be thankful for the sun staying up until 9 in the summer, but here we are. Before he could walk into the hall, I got his attention, asking if he wanted me to clean up the room behind the blue door. He just kind of smiled. There was this look I just couldn't quite place, maybe concern? Then he gave me some bullshit answer about how he had done a spring cleaning back in May, so not to worry about that. Just focus on the areas where people move through and keep things nice. That's all I need to do. A little weird, but whatever. Then he dropped the goddamn bomb that they're hosting a wedding tomorrow, so I'm gonna need to do a deep clean. Fuck, I was not prepared for this. I tried making up some excuse about not being able to do it tonight because of a family event or something, and he just told me to come back after the event was over. Said he absolutely needs it cleaned by tomorrow. I didn't have anything with me. I wasn't going to drive the 30 minutes to get back home either with my busted-ass air conditioner. There wasn't much choice, so I just started doing whatever I could and doing it fast. Swear to God, I've never cleaned that fast in my life. Dusting corners, scrubbing down filthy baseboards. They wanted me to pull out a whole damn carpet cleaner. Before I knew it, the sun had gone down without me realizing. The church lights were so bright with the stained glass that it was hard to notice when it got dark. But now, it felt like the lights were a haven. Phone said it was around 9:30, so not much time since sundown. That's when I realized I forgot to bring my phone charger, which was just really fantastic. A cherry on top of the whole thing, you know. At least it still had about half the battery. So I put it in power saved and just hit work even harder. It wasn't until I was cleaning windows that shit started getting weird. Maybe 30 minutes later, I was up on the stepladder, going down the stained glass windows with a soft rag and warm water, getting ungodly amounts of dust, may I add, when something suddenly thumped hard against the window. Honestly, with how hard it hit, I don't know how the window didn't break. Sounded like a whole cinder block. But it must have hit just right on the window trim to absorb the impact. Almost made me fall off the ladder, though. Hell, I was barely saved thanks to the clumsy recovery reflexes I've honed all my life. It took me a minute, but I steeled myself and went out the front door, looking right around the corner to where the window was. There was a streetlight that illuminated the entire side, giving me a pretty clear view. Nothing was there, though. Only the small, worn-down graveyard a few feet away from the church, made even creepier by the shadows being cast from the saturated light of a sodium bulb. That was about the time I noticed one of the shadows longer than the other. When I looked back toward the cemetery, there was a tall, dark-suited man with a wide-brimmed hat, just kind of standing in front of one of the graves. I'm going to throw this out there. If you want intricate details of the rest of the night, you're not going to get a lot. Things are still a massive blur, and I'm completely fucking freaked out. This is all I can remember in the very rapid escalation that came next. Obviously, seeing the goddamn Undertaker making his WWE return in the middle of a graveyard was not on my agenda last night. I ran my ass inside so fast I should be on a plane to the goddamn Paris Olympics right now, okay? I need you to understand just how little I'm willing to fuck around with whatever's going on here. I got right back in there and locked that door, deadbolted it, whatever I needed to do. Whatever the hell was in here might just be some spooky spirit shit, but that thing out there could very well be an in-real-life murderer. Look, if I'm gonna die, let it be by some instant 13 ghosts mess. I'm not chill with being murdered by a human. They can be really fucked up. Locked and deadbolted, but I didn't stop there. I flipped every light switch on and ran down the hall into William's office, shut the door and deadbolted the fuck out of it too. Then I grabbed my phone and started to make a call to whatever officer they would send out here. Except I'm in bumfuck nowhere. No damn signal. And somehow, even though I put power mode on, I was at 15% on my battery. I tried calling the cops again, and my phone died right then and there. At that point, I was decidedly not chill, and was debating whether it was my best move to just hide in there or risk getting out to my car. It took me a few minutes, but I started to kind of calm down and try to rationalize everything. It was probably just a gravestone, right? Like a taller one with one of those weird sculptures on it. I've never looked too close at it to be able to tell, to be honest. Not especially planning on it unless it's high noon and the sun is shining. This was not that time, though, so I decided that for now, I was safe in there, and we were just going to chalk all this up to being a big misunderstanding late at night. Nerves going a few fewer miles per hour, I decided to go back to cleaning windows. That was about all that was left other than cleaning the baptism pool, and that was as simple as a quick scrub since it didn't seem to be used often. All good, we're getting through this. I'm sorry I start talking in the plural when I'm freaked out. Washing the windows was going okay, but I still kept the deadbolt and everything on the door and every light on. All good, all fine. No worries, just wiping the window. Then came the screaming. Ice in my damn veins. It was a woman, I think. All I know is it was guttural, like the sound of grief in the rawest form. I don't know what the cause of the scream was, but I could tell it was in the building. It took me a minute to get moving again, but I had to know if I was right. It was still going, too, with few stops in between the loud roars of anger and despair. I was right. I wish I wasn't, but it was coming from behind the blue door. It kept going, too, but it sounded so fucking far away down there that I'm not really sure how it could. Unless there's some massive concrete bunker under there, I don't know how there could be anything more than a crawl space. Then, it stopped. I was in the hallway at that point, in the middle of trying to rip myself in half so I could run away. There was that one nagging little feeling that this could be someone who was in trouble. I couldn't just leave someone here if something was going on. That would make me just as responsible, wouldn't it? I swear to God, if my mama hadn't raised me, my ass would have been gone faster than my dad. I knocked on the door, given a second to see if there was any response. It was only a moment until there was a faint answer, like a hello, I think. I kind of chased down my courage and shouted through the door, asking who they were. No answer. I knocked on the door again, and still, nothing. I gave it one more good knock, figuring the third time was the charm. Turns out, that's bullshit. Right as I let the third knock go, things went to hell. The lights flickered, briefly at first, but they kept going sporadically. Never actually went off for more than seconds at a time, but always flickered on just enough to fuck with my vision. My eyes were doing that thing where you can't see in the dark after coming in from the bright sun, making everything in the dark vague. I turned around, ready to find my way out of the church and just say hell with this for the night. Except I turned back toward the sanctuary to leave and saw an entire congregation standing there before the lights flickered off again. I'm proud to report that I did not, despite popular reports, soil myself in that moment. Instead, I screamed like a damn Looney Tunes character and started running for my keys sitting on the first pew. Thankfully, the lights came back on steadily, and it was no longer occupied by whatever ghostly churchgoers were there just seconds before. I thought I had caught a break. Thought I was going to grab my keys and make the run to the car. Water started splattering behind me. The baptism pit was running, quickly splashing as the tub filled. I took a gulp, turned around, and that's about when things went totally fucking shining on me. Deep crimson was pouring out of the faucet, interspersed with intense blasts of a rusty, dirty, black-like swamp water. I wanted to throw up right then and there, seeing all the crimson splattering everywhere against the white backdrop. I'm not really religious, but a baptism pit filling with blood seems a little sacrilegious, I guess. I wasn't waiting around to debate the ethical implications of a bloody ghost bath, though. I turned around to grab my keys, which were still sitting on the pew. Mistake number two. Face to fucking face. I don't know who it was. I don't know what it was. All I know is that I was face to face with one of the dozens of good church patrons that now filled the sanctuary. The sound that came out of me was like a car hitting the brakes at 70 miles an hour. I'm certain every dog in the Tri-County area must have perked up, because this thing still haunts me. Like it's burned into my mind because it was right there in my face, almost nose to nose, if it had one. The face was waxy, almost like eggshell white skin. Not scary by itself, but the dark, hollow sockets instead of eyes were what really got me. I expected to be staring into thin air, but I'm seeing into the back of this thing's skull. That was when it opened its mouth, rancid, decayed breath blowing into my face. If I'd eaten anything since yesterday morning, I might have puked then and there. When it opened its mouth, I snatched my keys off the pew and tore off down the middle aisle. Sounds from hell were what started all around me. The organ came to life, screeching and out of tune. Then came the singing, that same goddamn hymnal as the last time. I started wishing I hadn't deadbolted and chained the door when I was too shaky to pull it open. But somehow, I got out of there and tore the hell out of the parking lot. And here we are. I've been up for hours on end because I can't get that face out of my mind. Not to mention, I still don't know what the hell was going on behind that blue door. That scream sounded human, and I could swear I heard someone saying hello after the first knock. I don't know what to trust anymore, though, after this morning. I got a text from William. Know what it said? Because I expected it to read along the lines of, "What in the hell happened here?" Nope. "Wow, cleanest I've ever seen this place in years. Amazing job. Thank you." What the fuck? I'm gonna do some research, maybe see if I can find anything on that cemetery or the church. Hell, I'm about to look into William himself. something doesn't sit right about him. And yes, I know there are going to be some people asking me why I don't just quit or break the lock. Number one, I am so damn poor, y'all. Like, I get why the job pays so much now, but the chances of me finding anything else right now are slim. My landlord's chomping at the bit to evict me so he can raise the rent again. Honestly, if it gets down to it, I might. I don't know what the hell is past that door, but if things start looking like there may be someone in there, I'm not past some vandalism. Anyway, I'm off until tomorrow night after Wednesday's service. I'll probably try to do an early cleanup again in the daylight so I don't deal with this again. I'll update if anything happens, but I really don't plan on being there overnight again unless I absolutely have to.
So, that was fucked up. I don't really know what to say. Like, I genuinely am still... I don't know what's going on. I mentioned a while back I've been agnostic at best since leaving evangelical Southern Baptism over a decade ago. I was the Reddit atheist back in the beginning. Now, I don't know if I can ever live my life the same. I want you to know that what you're about to read may shake your faith a little.
Yo, it's Jay Uso from WWE,
and I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer, SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win. Let's Chumba.
Yeah.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
I went in early on Wednesday evening, hoping to catch William before anyone else got there. Sure enough, I pulled up and he was already there, car in the parking lot. I hurried in out of the heat, thankful that at least the AC worked, even if this place was haunted as shit. Found William in his office. He was surprised to see me, at the least. There wasn't really much else that I could do at this point. The encounter on Monday night fucked me up. I could still smell the stench of that thing, the decay from its breath. I wanted to gag. That's not to mention, I kept hearing the sound of blood splashing in the baptism tub. Did you know blood splashing sounds different than water splashing? I think it's because of the consistency of it. It's really gross. I've been wearing earbuds most of the time since because it just keeps ringing. He must have known when I was there about. Not that he looked scared or anything, just concerned. Before I could even get a word out, he asked me what happened. Kinda took me off guard, to be honest. I was honestly going in expecting to be gaslit as insane. Take the little wins where I can, I guess. So I told him everything. The congregation, the swelling music and hymns, the shadows in the cemetery, and blood pouring from the baptism faucet. Everything was out in the open. And he acknowledged what I was saying, though didn't say much as I was going through my story. Until I told him about the screaming through the blue door. That one got him. Something changed on his face. Worry, maybe? I couldn't entirely place it. That was when I really leveled with him, just one question to ask. Am I safe, or should I quit? Yeah, seems like a stupid question, I know. Nobody is safe in a haunted fucking church. What kind of bullshit is that? It was all I could think of, though, and the crux of what I needed to know. I grew up watching horror and shit, worked in haunts for a while, and I can deal with horror-type shit. As long as I know it can't hurt me and won't kill me. Haunted church? Sure. I'll just take an edible before I go in. Me and the spirits can chill. Hell, I'll bring some for them. Maybe they'll shut the fuck up. I was expecting him to tell me the opposite, though. So imagine my surprise when he tells me that I'm physically in no danger. He probably realized I didn't believe him, too. Still not entirely sure if he was trying to get me to quit then and there, too. The story I got at that point in the day already seemed like bullshit, or at least not the entire story. Unfortunately, I was right. But I couldn't settle for just leaving it at that. In short, William told me that what I was experiencing were former parishioners. He said he's had experiences too. Hell, said he was terrified by almost the same thing happening to him as I had Monday night, way back when he first came here. Even apologized that he hadn't told me before, saying it was not okay and offering me a bonus for my troubles. Yeah, this was starting to sound like there was a lot more at play here. From his story, the church was hit badly by a strange plague back in the early 1800s. Nothing surprising there, considering we knew bumfuck all about diseases and spread them everywhere. Williams said most of the congregation perished, with the only survivors being the single pastor and his family, who somehow made full, prosperous recoveries. Totally not shady at all, right? What he tells me from there is all conjecture, because supposedly he can only theorize. The churchgoers would apparently gather often, even staying at the church for days, worshiping and praying for a cure. Meanwhile, this obviously would spread the disease among the flock, just damning them all one by one. Still, the preacher insisted they stay steadfast in the Lord, praying for forgiveness even as bodies began piling up out back. His family were some of the first sick, with his son even supposedly thought dead at one point, though looking back, it must have just been a very deep coma. Yet, they're the only ones that survived. Everybody in that cemetery was once a member of this church who perished in that plague. The amount of death in one building would definitely be a magnet for weird shit. But William insists that the spirits are still looking for the preacher, believing he sacrificed them for his own family to live. I was honestly on board with that explanation. He assured me that the spirits wouldn't harm me, simply trying to get me to do what they wanted. Except then the question arises, what the fuck does a congregation of ghost Christians want me to do for them? Open the door. That's what they wanted me to do, according to William. According to him, the ashes of the preacher and his family are stored down there. He was superstitious after losing his entire flock to a plague. They found him and his entire family dead down in that room one day, door and room freshly painted with a bright seafoam blue. From what William told me, he picked up on some Gullah Geechee superstitious customs when he started getting paranoid. They said spirits couldn't cross through, mistaking the blue for water, so he would be safe. Out of respect for the dead family, the church has kept the door blue since. William assured me that I was safe and that there was nothing behind that door. It was simply a small room, sealed off out of respect or adherence to the dead, whatever I wanted to call it. The story was kind of believable when he was telling me. Maybe it was just my willingness to buy in thanks to just having my experience validated. Either way, he reassured me, and I took my leave for the afternoon, telling him I would be back after service. Was I going to have to be here for a while after dark? Yeah, but the bonus was $600, so who are you to judge me? It wasn't until I was back home that I really started thinking about it. There was no way there was a room there. It didn't make sense with the outside of the church. So, it started bringing me to other questions. Like, if he was so willing to tell me that, why not just show me? Spirits couldn't slip in behind that easily, right? Should be just an empty room, right? Then I thought about the screams I heard. They were definitely behind the door. But if spirits aren't allowed to cross in, then why the hell are they there? Is my haunting logic broken? Look, something wasn't sitting right with me about how he was acting. Something about what he was saying was giving away that there was more to everything. So, I decided to solve this shit once and for all. Wasn't there some movie where the ghosts were trying to give hints about how someone needed help? Like, they were doing terrifying haunting shit, but really just trying to help? Crimson Peak, maybe. Either way, I thought that was a legitimate possibility. I'm not going to stereotype or anything, but we've had a number of evangelical preachers doing shady shit in the news lately. My conscience wouldn't let me pass. So, I ran into town before I was due to go back after Wednesday's service, bought a set of bolt cutters and a crowbar. I'm finding out what's in that damn thing, even with a little vandalism. I kept everything hidden in my car until William left. He gave me some platitudes about still being there and being a dependable employee that he could count on. It sounded like a very veiled warning, though.
like telling me to tread carefully with whatever I did that night. That kind of reinforced my feelings about what I was going to do. He finally left around 9, right when the sun went down, and I was finishing up vacuuming the sanctuary. I waited, made sure he was gone for a few, just sitting in one of the pews waiting so I could make sure nobody saw me getting bolt cutters out of my car. I made it to my car fine, but when I turned to walk back into the church, there was a line of dark figures suddenly standing among the cemetery headstones. None of them moved, just staring me down. Definitely upped my speed to get back into the church, and I slammed the door behind me, even if he said they couldn't harm me. Hell, that could have been a lie too. Who knows at this point? I ran in, made sure every light was on, and started going at it. Cut off the padlock, cut the chain, and started hitting at it with the crowbar, when things began going to hell. The lights went out and gospel music began. I could look out into the sanctuary and see that the congregation was already there. I don't know if it was the adrenaline or what, but I suddenly got some Hulk-level strength and braced my foot against the doorframe, pushing the crowbar in harder. It finally gave, crashing in hard to the wall as it swung in. Deep blue light was pouring from below, showing faintly at the end of a long staircase. First off, I don't know how the hell there was a basement this deep in swamp-ass Georgia. Nothing about a lot of this makes sense, to be honest. But I could hear the screams again, this time louder, full force, drilling into my brain. I kept making my way forward, though, determined to find the source. There could be someone hurt down there, or by the sounds of it, multiple people. The scream seemed a layer on itself, like a host of people all crying out in unison. It drowned out the gospel music, which started growing fainter behind me. Whatever was in there didn't even register for me at first. I had no idea what I was looking at, even more unsure about if it was something real. Maybe William was trying for a budding SFX career in Atlanta, I don't know. I was trying to rationalize a lot of things, until it hit me. I'm describing it from memory, so bear with me. My eyesight isn't great, and I sure as hell didn't get close. The bright blue light was actually emanating from that thing, almost like a fucking anime aura. I have no idea how else to describe it, but the light was just radiating from it in waves, washing over me as it did. I could feel light. Not like when you sit in the sun for too long and start to burn, though. This was like water washing over me, sort of like floating down a lazy river, feeling the current flow past you towards the sea. I think back on it, and I should have felt more terrified, but the aura of it was peaceful, like it was speaking to me through it. Be not afraid. If you're a former Christian of any sort, you've heard that. Hell, even I feel like it's stereotypical. But I heard it. Not with my ears, but through the waves. I suddenly felt my heart rate relax, my muscles loosening as the aura continued. I felt at peace here for the first time in ages, and I knew it wasn't my antidepressants. That was when I took a full look at the creature in the room. Bright skin, shining like the sun, was giving off the aura. For a moment, I thought it was a massive bundle of limbs at first, which wasn't totally off base, but this thing looked like multiple torsos all conjoined, like they were sewn together, all standing back to back in a circle. Each one of them had different features, but each was covered in eyes, blinking every different color I knew of, and some I couldn't quite comprehend. Every single one of them was fixed on me, though. And that's when I noticed pieces of them were missing. Arms and legs were cut off, leaving bleeding stumps that were gushing as if cut recently. There was a steady trickle of bright red falling from the creature, chained to a wall in the small room. The bodies looked frail, malnourished, and emaciated. Despite that, they were still pristinely clean, even bleeding. Its eyes remained fixed on me, a pleading in them. Help us. It spoke to me again,
this time more frail than the first. It must have known that I wasn't the same as whoever put it there. I don't know if it could sense something or just went off guesswork, but it was asking me for help.
That was when William spoke from the steps behind me. The angel changed, an aura of anger and fury taking over the blue, turning it to a crimson red. My sense of peace faded, turning to confront William, who was walking toward the angel, pulling a small pocket knife from his coat. I was still holding the crowbar, though I didn't even realize it until that moment when the entire atmosphere shifted. He stepped toward the angel, flicking the pocket knife against one of the outstretched hands, slicing a finger off and catching it before he turned to me. This motherfucker had the audacity to offer it to me like a fucking snack. I felt my stomach turn harder than it did smelling death's breath, with zero fucking idea of what was going on. I literally asked him if he was trying to get me to eat it. Meanwhile, there was this thing howling in pain in the corner. The screams were back, with every face distorting in terror as sound pierced the air. He waited a moment for them to stop before he started in again. "If I ate that finger," he said, "I would have prosperity beyond belief. All I had to do was believe in him and eat of the flesh. He even said he's willing to supply me with more if I find I'm not quite happy yet, with the other effect being a major extension on my life. The only question I could really think to ask was, how?" I'm sorry if the details are vague. I get overloaded incredibly easy with information, and this was, if you really want to put it liberally, a biblical amount of fuckery. His explanation made me even more sick. I grew up on the internet wild west of LiveLeak and LimeWire, and this might be the first time I've really gotten a comprehension of man's depravity. This motherfucker was evil. He popped the finger in his mouth more casually than Yuji Itadori could ever hope to. Said he was a devout man his entire life, believing God would send salvation for him and his flock, until the disease came. William told me how his son, Peter, fell ill first, having trouble breathing before slowly degrading, coughing blood from his lungs, and soon after going into a deep, death-like sleep. That was when he started taking a different route than prayer and praise. William gathered his flock in church one day, bringing them all together in a marathon of praise and worship to God. Then he began convincing them that it was time to be rebaptized in the blood of the Lord, cleansing them of their illnesses. He brought in water, lining up all the parishioners to bring through the baptism tub, and he baptized them, one by one, making sure they were thoroughly drenched. Once everyone was soaked, back at their pew, ready to begin another hymn, he took his place on the pulpit and let loose the plan. He set up a rope ahead of calling over everyone, tagging up sacks of lye in the rafters. From there, it was just pulling on the rope, slicing the bags open with nails in the rafters, and causing a caustic snow to fall down on the soaked congregation. He said it was a glorious sight, everyone quickly realizing their baptism in the waters of heaven led to burning as if by the fires of hell. It took minutes before they all passed, killing everyone in the church except William. That was when the angel appeared. According to William, it was sent as punishment for the blasphemy he just committed. This jackass literally said, "I'm not going to confuse you with the details, but I studied a bit of dark practices," and trapped the fucking thing with whatever it was. That's why it was still chained down here, letting him just pick pieces off whenever he wanted. He said he cut off a foot for each of his family, making a stew for them while they were sick. Just pouring some into his son's mouth brought him out of a coma in hours. The angel's flesh is quite literally made of miracles, he said. And then he gave me the ultimatum. Leave and have no job, with my entire mental state totally fucked by this encounter and nobody to believe me, or I could die. Two options, neither of which were great for me. He lifted the knife, getting ready to strike if need be.
Fight or flight came in hard. I don't know how I swung the crowbar as fast as I did. Maybe adrenaline again, but it bashed the side of his head. William crumpled quickly, falling to the ground in front of me with a thud and knocking his head on the hard floor. Dead. The chains holding the angel snapped, freeing it immediately. I don't even know what the hell happened after that. There was a bright flash. I could hear a voice saying, "Thank you." And suddenly, I was standing out in the cemetery. In front of me, the church was ablaze, a full inferno already. The heat coming off was intense, immediately drying any of the humid air around me. It raged up with the sound of rising alongside the smoke, before totally incinerating in the dark night, flames dying out just as quickly as they began. Where the church once stood was nothing but a pile of ash, not even one board left standing. Look, I'm not talking to anyone unless they come to me asking what happened. Even then, not like they'll really believe me. William's got to be gone for good now, so maybe they'll just think he torched it for insurance, but the deed went wrong. Who knows? Maybe I'll get arrested. At this point, I'm out of a job, so it might be the preferable alternative to trying to find a job in this economy. Things are going to be rough. I'm still shaken up, and the anxiety about what's going to happen is fucking killing me. I don't know, though. Maybe after this, I'll have an angel watching out for me. Fingers fucking crossed, at least. That was House of the Lord by Ross Tyson. Ross Tyson is a writer, parent, and cat wrangler living on the southeast Georgia coast, mostly known for posting stories as Googly Eyes 93 on No Sleep. They enjoy dipping into sci-fi and fantasy on occasion as well, with their ongoing series Strays and Between Sunless Seas. And that, friends, closes out our episode this evening. I'd like to thank Ross Tyson for the stories. Ross, please forgive my accent. And also the state of Georgia in general. I was fortunate enough to visit historic Savannah several years back, and it was hands down one of the most beautiful places in the country. Of course, the copious amount of ghost tours didn't hurt either. We'll be continuing season 13 of Horror Hill next week at the same day and time, so be sure to keep your internet dial firmly tuned in. Until then, folks, stay spooky. You've been listening to the Horror Hill Podcast, a production of Chilling Entertainment and the creative team at Chilling Tales for Dark Nights. Tonight's episode was hosted, narrated, scored, and finalized by yours truly, Eric Peabody. Additional music by Nikki McSorley. Got a terrifying tale of your own that you'd like performed? Email it to us at submissions@simplyscarypodcast.com to have your work considered for future production. Note that any writing utilizing artificial intelligence is ineligible. If you enjoyed tonight's episode, why not help us spread our dark presence online? You can follow Chilling Tales for Dark Nights on social media, and upvote, subscribe, and hit the bell notification icon if you're listening to this on YouTube. It helps us out a lot and also keeps you up to date on new episodes. If you'd like access to uninterrupted horror, free of ads and these annoying bookend segments, might I recommend signing up to be a patron? You'll get access to hundreds of episodes of this show, as well as everything from the other programs in the Chilling Tales for Dark Nights cabal. That means all of Scary Stories Told in the Dark, Drew Blood's Dark Tales, and more. It's a veritable smorgasbord of horrific delights. Head to chillingtalesfordarknights.com to get started. If you're looking for someone to narrate or handle audio production for your own personal project, I just so happen to know a guy. Email me at ericpeabodyvoice@gmail.com. That's ericpeabodyvoice, and we can talk details. If darkness is what you're after, listener, your search is over. Yet, let it be known, you haven't found the darkness. The darkness has found you.
Hey, it's Bubba Wallace from 2311 Racing. You know what feels like forever? Sitting on a plane waiting for takeoff. Good thing I've got Chumba Casino. With daily boosts and social casino games on tap, this is the kind of fun that makes time fly. Why not turbocharge your downtime? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.